Parents, if you have a child that likes to run around cracking jokes or making funny voices, you might want to think twice before stopping them, because they may have as highly successful career ahead of them as my next guest, Phil Proctor, who is an internationally known actor, singer, writer, composer, director, and producer. Welcome, Phil, and thank you for taking the time to join us.
I'm exhausted just listening to all those credits. But you know, Jim, the fact is that I thought about this the other day. I started as a child actor in New York when I was 9 years old, doing live television on WPIX-TV. Did a show called Uncle Danny Reads the Funnies, which was kind of an improvised show of the funny comic strips in the Daily News. And Elliot Gould also did that show. That was the first time I met Elliot, and he's still a sometimes pal of mine. So I've been in this business now. I just turned 72, so you can do the math. I've been in this business for a very long time, and that's why the list is so long, because I figured out that if I limited myself to just acting, I'd have to wait for people to hire me all the time, and I was too impatient. I wanted to do more and do things kind of self-motivated, so I started to use all of the talents that God gave me and some that I made up and extend my career into different areas, which led to the Firesign Theater for 45 years, which was a four-man satirical comedy group, where we basically did everything ourselves. We produced ourselves and directed and wrote the material and wrote the music and designed the records and went in and recorded them. It has been an extraordinary career. And even though we did lose our founding inspiration, Peter Bergman, about 4 months ago now, March 9th, he passed away of complications of leukemia, we're still bravely staggering on, and we might be doing some performing, more or less a tribute to Peter and his terrific work in bringing the group forward, creating the group. But also we are doing a lot of publishing now. And if you go to our website, you'll find out all of the stuff that's in the pipeline that's going to be coming out in some of the books and CDs that we have recently released. I guess the most amazing one of which is called Duke of Madness Motors. And it's a book that recounts in pictures and art and our own personal stories our early radio years. And it includes an 85-hour MP3 of all of the early radio shows that we could find, many of them thanks to fans who had recorded these shows. And it's an amazing, like a time capsule of comedy. And also it's surprising how much of the stuff that we talked about and made fun of at the time has come true since then. And there's still a few things that haven't come true yet, some of our predictions, but stay tuned, I would say.
Now, a number of our listeners are familiar with Firesign Theater, but for those who aren't, this is a group that was during the golden age of what were comedy albums. I mean, entire albums dedicated to comedy.
This predated
Saturday Night Live and Second City and all like that. What was it like to work on an album that was just your voices doing comedy?
As you said, in the early days of comedy recordings, it was usually one man and one routine. It would be Shelley Berman, or it would be Bob Newhart, or Bill Cosby, my wife is helping me here, or Lenny Bruce. He had problems with censorship. But they basically would record their routine, or in Steve Martin's case, record a whole bunch of routines and then cut them together so that it would be the best of the stand-up that they were doing. But what Firesign Theater did was we were all kind of children of the radio, children of the audio theater. And so what we wanted to do was to revolutionize the kind of comedy album that people would listen to. And so we wrote and constructed and designed and recorded very complex layered albums that you could listen to, that you had to listen to many, many times in order to get all of the puns and the jokes and the levels of meaning, and also to follow the story in a coherent way, because we tried to write adventures that also would captivate the audience and keep them listening. And the other thing that we did was, in the tradition of Stan Freberg and Bob and Ray and Ernie Kovacs, three particular great heroes of mine, well, all of them, four great heroes of mine, but I was more influenced by Bob and Ray and Ernie Kovacs in the early days, we parodied the sounds of advertising, the sounds of radio, the sounds of news reporting. We tried to create a kind of a satire of what people were listening to or watching on television on a daily basis. And we did it in a way, not just to satirize, but also to kind of break the thrall of commercialism that affects all of us in the American culture. And that was another one of our goals. So people would be listening, say, peripherally to our albums, and they'd hear a commercial for something, and it sounded real. So they kind of say, oh, I'm listening to a radio station. But then we'd twist it out, and we'd send it off somewhere else, or it would segue into an entirely different place. But we had already hooked somebody because they thought they were listening to something that was familiar and real, and really was crazy and surreal. That was one of the instincts for the kind of work that we did in the albums.
And of course, you parlayed this talent into a later career of voice work in films and television. And this is probably where a lot of our younger listeners are more familiar with you.
Yeah, that's right. Because coming off of a career in theater and Broadway musicals like The Sound of Music and A Time for Singing and a show called The Amorous Flea, which brought me out to L.A., I was very familiar with using my voice as an actor. And when I fell into the Firesign Theater mob, which was started on radio and KPFK, listener-supported Pacific Radio, I realized what fun it would be to dedicate my career in more part to using my voice. And as a result, I got myself a voiceover agent. Before I knew it, I was doing cartoon voices. And the first one that I did where I had kind of an assigned role was the Smurfs out of Hanna-Barbera. And I played King Gerard for several seasons in a spinoff called Pee-wee and something. Pee-wee and Herman? No, that's not right. Pee-wee and Paul Rubens? I don't know. Anyway, Pee-wee was in the title. I'll think of it later. And that was very exciting because you'd go into a room and all of your comic heroes would be sitting in there putting on funny voices. People like Alan Young and people like Jonathan Winters would be sitting right next to you doing funny voices. It was absolutely thrilling. Then later on, I got a long-running job as Howard on the Rugrats, and we had 14 seasons doing that show. We did that show so long that they actually did a spinoff called All Grown Up, in which they had to put gray into our characters' hair because our cartoon characters were getting older. And Howard is, for those of you who may remember the show or not know the show, Howard's the father of Phil and Lil, the twins, and he's married to kind of a bossy lady, but they get along pretty well together. He's kind of the nerd of the Rugrats show. And we did three movies with Paramount based on those characters and really had a great run. It was a lot of fun.
And, of course, you do have a bit of a Cincinnati connection. You've been through our town a while back.
Oh, yeah. I've been through the town, and the chili has been through me. So I remember the town very, very well. I toured with Peter Bergman. We spun off from the Firesign Theater at one point because we wanted to tour more than the other guys did. And so we created Procter & Bergman, and we put together a whole bunch of crazy shows and toured the nation with it and also Canada. Played Toronto and Calgary and didn't get to Montreal, unfortunately, but a lot of other cities in Canada. And I remember Cincinnati. I'm a Midwestern boy. I come from Goshen, Indiana, originally. And when I was touring as an itinerant actor in other musicals like Brigadoon and Finian's Rainbow and various other things, we had these bus and truck tours, and we would go through the Midwest, and we'd go through upstate New York and these music circuses, which were scattered all over the Midwest and the East Coast, which were literally at that time tents that we performed in with kind of a Coliseum style seating and a round stage in the middle. And I did a major tour of the Sound of Music doing that as well. So I got to see a lot of towns, but I don't think I played Cincinnati. We played Columbus, Ohio, the Johnny Kenley Players. Once I actually did a tour of Bell, Book, and Candle with Betty White and Alan Ludden. And I remember we'd go to all these different theaters, but at the Kenley Playhouse, the stage was so big, we had to retime all of our entrances and exits so that we could get on stage at the right time. And I remember what a terrific operation that was. I remember Johnny Kenley riding around his campus on a bicycle, and what an exotic character he was. So I have a lot of fond memories of performing on the stage. And my wife and I still do that. We're members of a company called the Antius Company, which is a classical theater company here in L.A., and we're presently doing a thing we call Classics Fest, where we do stage readings of works that we are considering for our main stage productions. So while Macbeth is being performed on the main stage on our evenings off, like last night, we performed King John by Shakespeare, a very rare one of the history plays that you seldom get to see, in a tremendously well-received staged reading. So that keeps my chops up as well and keeps the brain alive because I have to handle all this beautiful language and often memorize these complicated speeches and things. So I'm still enjoying my life in the biz.
And I know that you've performed in Owensboro, Kentucky with one of Cincinnati's favorite adopted sons, Gary Sandy.
Yes.
Any chance of you making a returning appearance in Owensboro soon?
Well, the problem with the Mystery Writers Festival, which was created by Zev Buffman about 5 years ago now, is an economic one. It's the same problem that most of the country is suffering from. And we perform there at this beautiful multi-million-dollar River Park complex. It's an expensive endeavor, and it's hard to get people in to see it now because of the economics of things. But they resuscitated it after taking a couple of years off, and they did a shortened version of it in which basically the audio mystery presentation aspect of the festival was featured. So we got to do two original plays, one of which is called Lost at Sea, and was a murder mystery that takes place during a mystery cruise. And the other was an adaptation of a Mike Hammer piece called Encore for Murder by Max Allen Collins, who has basically inherited all of the manuscripts of Mickey Spillane and has been given the rights to adapt them in new forms. And what we do at the Mystery Writers Festival is that we do audio presentations with microphones and costumes and certain set pieces and live sound effects and sometimes live music of these pieces, adaptations of these stories and plays and things for an audio theater presentation. And then one of them wins an award, wins an Angie Award, which means that the writer will be represented by a major Hollywood talent agency, and there will be an endeavor to take the piece that won and have it made as a movie or get it designed as a television series or what have you. So it's a very, very interesting opportunity to express art on many, many levels. And we sincerely hope, we know that there's a great desire to do it again next year. We just have to keep our fingers crossed that they can find the funding to do it, because it's a great popular event with fans from all over the world. People come from all over the world to meet their favorite artists who are there in person, their favorite mystery writers. They give lectures about how to get into the mystery writing business and how they created their characters and this and that. And the spin-offs of it are quite amazing. Zev Buffman is now the artistic director of the Eckert Theater in Clearwater, Florida. And we are going to be, my wife and I and David Osman and his wife Judith Walcott, we're all going to be involved in a tour of Agatha Christie's BBC Murder Mysteries, which was originally created in Owensboro, Kentucky, and is now expanded into a kind of a hybrid radio piece with sets and costumes and special effects and surround sound. And we're going to be performing at the Eckert Hall in Clearwater at the end of the year in November. And then we're going to be doing 3 weeks at the Parker Playhouse in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, in January. And the Parker Playhouse was built by Zev Buffman, who is like one of the oldest living impresarios still out there producing for Broadway and touring shows and all. And I performed there. I did that show with Bob Cummings called Generations. Probably most of you people don't even know who Bob Cummings is now, but he was quite an amazing film actor who had a great show called Love That Bob, where he was a photographer. And we did a tour of Generation at the Parker Playhouse during their first season of this theater that Zev Buffman built. I will be going back there 50 years later to perform the BBC Murder Mysteries in January for 3 weeks. And I just can't wait. That's just amazing. I hope that the theater hasn't deteriorated too much after all that time and I don't fall through the stage. But it's going to be a great deal of fun to return there. So audio theater, most amazingly, is one of the things that I'm doing more of now than I ever did before. And that's because I think audio theater has become very popularized by people commuting, driving in their cars or jogging and listening to audio theater in their iPods. And I also had the opportunity to do scores of voices for the Golden Age of Pulp Fiction series of the L. Ron Hubbard stories. He wrote about 850 novels and short stories and thrillers in all these different genres, amazing, from science fiction to circus stories And the folks at his publishing company decided to record hundreds of them and release them in batches over the next several years. And what they do also is they've constructed a theater in Hollywood, the L. Ron Hubbard Theater, which is designed specifically for the production and presentation of live audio drama. And I'll be doing another one of those called A Can of Vacuum next month for them. And it's absolutely an amazing experience. So here I am touring the country doing audio theater in front of microphones with scripts in our hands. And this is very Firesign Theater, because although when we started years and years ago and we became famous, we would tour the country with elaborate shows. As we got older, we decided that it would be easier for us to walk out on stage with scripts in hand in front of microphones and show people kind of how we created the magic in the studio. And we found that it became a generic form that we could play with, easier for us to do, but at the same time, obviously, not just reading off of scripts, because it's all our own material, and we pretty well knew it. And if we forgot anything, the audience would throw the right line out. So we developed a way to kind of improvise and have fun and surprise one another and surprise the audience with this apparent easy form, four old duffers standing in front of microphones and reading from scripts. So that's been a fun way to extend our careers as well.
Well, Phil, I'm afraid we're running out of time. I could sit here and talk to you, I'm sure, for a couple of hours at least. But
I've accumulated so many amazing stories from all my experiences. And in some instances, I'm actually doing little podcasts and things now where I'm telling some of the adventures we had on the road as Procter & Bergman, how we survived a Chinese gangland shooting, and all of these strange UFO stories that I have to tell, and alien stories from some of the adventures I've had. I mean, it's amazing. The problem is I don't have time to write things down because I'm still doing occasional roles at Pixar and Disney films and performing on stage and all that. But it's fun to be able to share some of my adventures with your listeners. And I hope that they are turned on by audio theater and that they will support it in any form.
Well, if you'd like to find out more about the adventures of Phil Proctor, please be sure to visit our website at WVXU.org. Phil, thank you so much for taking time to talk with us.
It was a pleasure. Thank you so much for taking time to listen to me.
For Round Cincinnati, this is Jim Stump.
Guard! Guard! I want to see my ambassador.
Easily done. He's in the next cell.
Use the telephone.
I don't have a dime.
Here, use one of the pages of me novel.
It's no good. They're tapping the lines. If I could only speak to someone, if I could only tell my story.
Famous writer to see the condemned man.
Oh, you poor brute of a killer without a conscience. I'm wet with compassion.
Excuse me, but it's always a pleasure to meet another member of the writing fraternity. Perhaps you would like to hear an excerpt from a great prison novel of eternal torment in cold leather. Oh, God.
Hey, what's troubling you, son? Padre, I'm tired of living and...
Old man River...
Ribba!
Ribba!
Now give me that gun. I don't have a gun, Father.